1973, via the Roe v. Wade decision, the U.S. Supreme Court made abortion legal in America. For years, as medical science advanced, many wondered why that ruling was never challenged via a new case, given how much more we now know about that baby in the mother's womb. New laws in states, most recently Alabama, may just take us to that point. With us now to review what's been happening via the legislative process in Alabama and other states that is encouraging the pro-life movement is the senior contributor with the National Catholic Register, Matthew Bunsen. How are you today, Matthew?
I'm well. How are you?
Terrific to have you here. NCRegister.com is the website for the National Catholic Register to learn more about this issue and other points of focus they'd like to shine a light on and inform you about. So give us some background about the Alabama law, because, as I said, there's been state after state which has passed and certainly has had challenged abortion prevention laws. Maybe before Alabama was Georgia. There were always heartbeat laws. Why was Alabama a different situation?
Well, Alabama, probably the best way to describe it is if all of the other states, including the Michigan's dismemberment bill, the Ohio heartbeat bill, all of the other heartbeat bills are considered tactical efforts at limiting the problems of abortion and eventually getting to the court, the Alabama bill can be considered a strategic initiative, a strategic effort to get to the Supreme Court with a straight up and down vote on Roe v. Wade, on the total legality of abortion. Can a state ban it essentially completely, as Alabama did? So while the other ones are more narrow in their focus, it's pretty clear that Alabama is intended to get to the court with that in mind.
It's called the Human Life Protection Act. It makes attempting or performing an abortion a felony offense in Alabama. Doctors who perform abortion could be charged with Class A felony. That means they would face anywhere between 10 years and life in prison. This applies only to doctors, not the mothers who are looking for abortions. And it does also include a provision which would allow abortions in cases where an abortion is needed to prevent a serious health risk to the unborn child's mother, which that's defined in the bill as a serious health risk as a condition requiring an abortion to avert the mother's death or to avert serious risk of substantial physical impairment of a major bodily function. So going off what you just said, Matthew, would it appear to you that the intent of this bill was not to make new law in Alabama? This was the catapult to get to, as I said in the introduction, a representation of the Roe v. Wade case?
Well, I think that will be the inevitable side effect, and certainly the crafters of it and many members of the pro-life community are aware of the likely inevitability of this reaching the Supreme Court. What I think we are seeing with these heartbeat bills, the dismemberment bills, a host of these other tactical legislation, again, to use that term, the Alabama bill is different in that it is very much a complete act of conscience on the part of Alabama legislators who wanted to bring an end to the regime of abortion in Alabama. Now, as you note, very correctly, and I appreciate that because there has been a lot of misrepresentation on the part of the mainstream media, this does not criminalize abortion for a woman who actually seeks or procures it, but it does criminalize it for the doctors who perform it. That's an important distinction to make, especially in the way that the bill has been presented. The bill itself, though, clearly is aimed at defending the rights of the unborn, and we're moving more and more into a human rights, civil rights question for unborn children. And it's now moving that whole argument into the question of human rights and civil rights for them, while at the same time, as I said, attempting to end abortion, certainly as we've known it, at least within the jurisdiction of Alabama, with the predictable response from the abortion movement.
It was certainly an interesting debate watching it, too, and it proved the ignorance some have. In particular, I'm thinking of Democratic State Representative John Rogers, who, direct quotes, I'm not paraphrasing, and this is off of a transcript from a video, "Some kids are unwanted, so you kill them now, or you kill them later. You bring them in the world unwanted, unloved, you send them to the electric chair. So you kill them now, or you kill them later. Some parents can't handle a child with problems. It could be retarded, might have no arms, no legs." Eloquent speech, wasn't that? Sarcastically, he says.
What we're hearing in the grimmest sense possible is the reality of where abortion leads. We went from 1992 and Bill Clinton's campaign and the Democratic platform of using language of abortion being safe, legal, and rare to the situation now, unfortunately, where they are looking directly to enshrine abortion on demand. That means abortion at any time, even up to birth, and depending upon how they're framing some of their laws, even after birth, what is tantamount to infanticide. That is going to be enshrined, I think, certainly in the approach of all of the Democratic candidates. All 24 are now in support of abortion in the most radical terms. And as we're seeing on local levels, on state levels, these radical abortion bills are, again, there's only one word you can use for this, tantamount to infanticide, to the degree that a child can be born and allowed to die, or, as we heard from the supporters, proponents of the proposed bill in Virginia, it might even be possible to kill a child after birth. And in a way, what we're also looking at is what has been bandied about by some supporters of the abortion movement for a while now, and that would be what is might be termed a fourth trimester abortion, in which parents would have the right to kill their child even after birth.
So, well, you know, history being what it is, it pretty much walks in lockstep with the Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger's philosophy. She was all for getting rid of the burdensome of society, as I think she so disgustedly put it one time.
Yes, that's right. Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was a dedicated eugenicist. I believe that she gave at least one speech to the Ku Klux Klan. She spoke very openly about what she referred to as inferior races. So this goes hand in glove with the effort to choose winners and losers in society, but also to perform eugenics, which every time it has been tried in any culture around the world has led to catastrophic results. And as we're seeing now in places like New York, where the vast majority of unborn minority children, in particular African-American children, are aborted. And this is a catastrophe that I think more and more members of the African-American community certainly are becoming aware of, as more African-American voices are speaking up about what has been a deliberate effort to cultivate abortion within that part of American culture. And this, again, is very consistent with what we're hearing from the supporters of abortion, not just here in the United States, but around the world, who want absolute unfettered access to abortion, abortion on demand. But let's also remember that this goes very closely with the emergence of euthanasia and assisted suicide. I think it was Albert Schweitzer, the great humanitarian, who made the observation that if you cease to reverence life, you will cease to reverence all life. And what he meant by that was that if you cease to reverence the unborn, you're also going to find little value in the elderly, the vulnerable, what Pope Francis refers to as the throwaway culture, in which everyone becomes disposable based upon their perceived value to you or society.
An interesting poll trend from Gallup going back from 1995-2018. The question was, with respect to the abortion issue, would you consider yourself to be pro-choice or pro-life? 1995, 56% pro-choice, 33% pro-life. Today, or the most recent numbers, 2018, 48-48 split.
Yes.
Would you say that we are now or we're close to becoming a pro-life nation?
I think you can say that we are on the verge of that. Now, when you drill down into some additional numbers, the farther you go into a pregnancy, the more opposition there is to abortion. So, for example, I've seen multiple polls just in the last few months that do you support third trimester abortions, for example? Do you support so-called late-term abortions? The vast majority of Americans, including people who consider themselves to be pro-abortion, we're looking at numbers of 71 to 81%, are opposed to abortion in the third trimester. That's a significant statement. What it also says is that Americans are open to sensible limitations, even if they're willing to accept the idea, as depressing as it is, that abortion should be legal at all. Even if they're open to that, they do recognize that there have to be limits to how far you can go in performing abortions, which places the Democratic candidates who are running right now at square odds with the vast majority of Americans who do not like this idea of abortion all the way to birth.
This is going to be something very interesting to watch. A lot sooner versus later, my belief happens to be. And one of the places to watch how this is going to continue to unfold will be the National Catholic Register, which is ncregister.com. We've been joined by their senior contributor, Matthew Bunsen. Matthew, thank you for your insight and information today.
Very good to be with you.